Three friends.
Three cities.
One question.
How can we turn this world around?
You're on with Earth Friends.
Hey guys.
Hi everyone.
Hello.
So we are on to our very, very special episode, A Wave of Change on Cloud 9 with Local Lab, featuring none other than Cara Rosas. Hey, thanks so much for being here.
Hi guys, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about everything with you guys.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
Amazing. So a little introduction about what Cara does and who she is. Cara is the project manager of Future Water Asia, an advisory firm that works with private companies and local government units to achieve water sanitation objectives. And she also serves as an impact manager for the Altru, a platform that matches volunteers and donors with organizations around the world. And last but not least, she is the executive director and co-founder of Local Lab Siargao, a social enterprise dedicated to supporting the local island community through different programs such as ensuring food security and implementing sustainable lifestyle practices. So, Cara, what has impacted you this week?
We had a meeting with the farmers, and mm-hmm. I think more than anything, it was seeing how engaged they were in setting the prices and working with one another in order to achieve food security in the island. So, for example, we do give them seeds every so often, mm-hmm. and they don't hoard it. And you see that they want to grow as a community, mm-hmm. and they want to impact each other the same way. And I think for me, more than anything, like, it's seeing people lift each other up that really makes me want to make more of a difference with them,
yeah.
and empower them even further.
Oh, wow. So could you please tell us more about Local and how it is living in Siargao? How did the locals react to your organization at first?
So actually, yeah, Local started just from being a snack bar in the island. So Local is based 1 hour away from General Luna. And here, that's where the founders wanted to build a restaurant that sources locally from the island and supports the farmers. And then when they started finding out, when they would go to the markets, they would find out the vegetables being sold here aren't actually grown by the farmers on the island.
Yeah.
And to them, that was puzzling because when they would drive around, they do see farmers working. Mm-hmm. And so as they dug deeper in the issue, it's because these farmers had no marketplace to sell. So what they would do is they would do, it's called Soroy Soroy. So they would get on their bikes every morning with their fresh harvest and then shout vegetables, vegetables for sale. And of course, your demand for that isn't steady. And it also takes a lot of time off your day. Digging deeper into the issue, that's when we found out, we have to help the farmers if we want to be a self-sustainable island. And if our goal is to really help the island, we have to help the locals here in the first place, because this is their island and we're just living here. Mm-hmm. And we're really lucky that they're letting us living in this place.
Yeah.
So from there, that's why we built one of our first projects with Local. So when we built NGOs, it's called the Local Tabo. So it's basically a marketplace where artisans and farmers could go and sell their vegetables. And we help them connect to restaurants, resorts, and just giving them a higher mm-hmm. demand. Then in exchange, to be part, to be able to sell in a Local Tabo, you have to be part of our Local Farm Network. So in this farm network, we want everyone to transition towards natural farming systems. So that's not using pesticides or fertilizers. And also at the same time, use seeds. There are two types of seeds, and we want them to be able to use the seeds that they could regrow and repurpose and harvest the seeds from and create even more crops. And from here, we already we work with around 100 farmers. So mm-hmm. that's around 8 to 9 farms that we work with. And we're about to expand our Local Tabo in General Luna, which is the more populated area, the tourism area here, and another Local Tabo in San Isidro. It's nice because we're slowly expanding and having more reach. And more than anything, it's really the purpose of Local Tabo was to give access to local and sustainable materials at affordable prices. For example, in the Local Tabo, we do have 3 different prices that we set. So there's Tabo buys it at the farm gate price. And then after, we have the Taga Isla price. So those are for locals who are paying the taxes on the island. Mm-hmm. And they get their vegetables at near farm gate price. So this, it gives them more access and even naturally healthy grown farm produce. And then we also have the Tabo price. So that's what covers the expenses to run the whole market. Mm-hmm. And then we also have delivery price for our resorts, our restaurants, and when it goes down to General Luna.
I'm actually quite curious with having multiple prices for a single product. How can you merge the system of having multiple prices with the customers being aware? Because
That's a good point.
Won't the locals not or all be aware? Won't
the tourists also not be as willing or as receptive to know that there are two price points and they're not being offered the lower/cheaper one?
Lower price.
Yeah.
So at the start, it is a weird pricing system. Like, people really couldn't comprehend it at the start. But like, when we explain what we're doing and why we're doing it, and really the whole purpose of this, the locals, they see this organization's trying to give me access to the discount where we could really buy vegetables for our family rather than like just buying canned food and things like that. And for the tourists here on the island, they buy from us because they understand our whole purpose of doing what we do. They know that when you buy vegetables from us, you're supporting the local farmers, you're helping them buy seeds, you're giving them access to trainings. And then also for the resorts, they put up their establishment here and they want as much as possible to support the local community. And this is their way of giving back.
Is this the only store that does that, or have other stores started to follow this system?
So there are some shops here that give discount if you're a local, or for example, I know some yoga studios here give free sessions to the locals. So really like the community here also. People from all over, like you just interact with everyone regardless of like their social class or your culture. And I think that's what's amazing about this island is that everyone is going towards the same goal and trying to help each other out.
Awesome. So going into more about the local life there, and I know you mentioned tourism. I'm kind of curious to learn more about how the locals are receptive towards tourism. Are there guidelines towards responsible tourism? Kind of what that looks like?
In the start, Siargao did have a tourism bubble and it's just growing like crazy. I know my friends would describe it as mushrooms going everywhere. Like all the new businesses every day, like there's something going. A lot of the locals, of course, like they were excited because this means more income for them because like they're going towards the tourism industry. Now there's different means of earning. Mm-hmm. But then so now, especially like during COVID, you realize that it is a bubble and it is not as sustainable as like it should be, right? It was a wake-up call for everyone here. How could we support ourselves at times like this when we were so reliant on income from the tourists before? Also, the locals, I think more than anything, in the start, you get so amazed when you come across so many different people that you've never seen before and for them to come to your island. And like it also makes them very proud. Like when we used to do some tours at the farm, like you could see them being so proud that they're able to actually teach like Westerners something that they didn't know. So it gives them a lot of confidence also. And shows like, okay, people are actually interested in my livelihood and they want to learn about it. Like even with the weavers that we work with for Local, where they realize, like the tourists realize, okay, it's so hard to make weave goods. And like you understand the value of why they're selling this at an amount. Because sometimes I think when we do shop or when we do buy stuff, like always forget the producer's perspective. Why are they selling at this price? Where are they sourcing their materials? And I think that's what we really want people to be more aware of. There are some resorts or like some restaurants who do order our weave goods. And they would ask, okay, like, why are you selling it at this price? And then so we explained to them, the weavers, they have to hike a little to go to the trees because now they cut off a lot of the trees that they would use for weaving. So they really have to go to the back and hike some place to get it. And then they dry it and then they clean it. And then after that, that's when they start making the weave products. Yeah. So it's really a whole process and like understanding that whole cultural aspect behind it and then also giving accreditation to the weavers.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people forget where their products are from and the amount of effort and loving care that people put into it. And you make a really good point with that. Yeah. So
that's really interesting sometimes to see that when you shop even in the US. I think very recently I was at a thrift store and I saw that the label of a couple of t-shirts, like garments, were made in the Philippines. It feels almost weird to buy something in the US and then realize it was made from where you're from. And that's like halfway across the world. So I'd love to hear more also about the project with the weavers and like where those final products are going. How does that fuel the local economy aside from weaving these products? Do they stay within the Philippine circuit or are they exported?
Do they only sell to like the resorts you were mentioning, or do they actually sell to like different islands? Or
we do have a lot of inquiries if we sell to other places, but then I think for the meantime we are focusing on the island first, like providing here all this material. I remember you can't ship certain materials like to Australia. I remember we had a bulk order of weaved beer cozies, and when we were about to ship it.
Are they the ones that cover the beer bottle?
Oh. Yeah, just the one that covers the beer
bottle.
Like an anti-condensation device.
That's kind of cute.
More for aesthetic, actually. But yeah, so like we weren't allowed to ship it out. And I think...
Beer, like, why aren't you allowed though?
Something with like Australia's rules of shipping this certain type of plant.
Oh.
But I think more than anything, what super helped the weavers was the weaving classes that we would do. Because like there were so many tourists who would come and weave, and like all the income goes towards them. But then I guess now, yeah, we're having a hard time finding like different means of helping the weavers earn.
So most of their income would usually come from like the weaving classes, would you say?
Yeah, the weaving classes are the weave goods that people eventually order when they go to the weave class. When they go to the classes and say, oh wow, okay, like this is the art behind it and this is why I would want to buy it.
Yeah. Wow. So how did your career shift from, I remember like hearing you worked in corporate life, and then how did you fully move to become a full-time NGO?
It really started when I took a semester abroad and I took my first development class. Like okay. Before I really thought like I was an economics background, I'd go into banking or something like that. But mm-hmm. then when I took this development class abroad, like I was with so many different people from different cultures, and I saw how we were all working together to solve one issue. And it was like interesting mm-hmm. to see what their perspectives and their takes on how their own country was able to solve it. And that's when it opened my eyes. Okay, we could do this also in our country if we network properly, if we really understand the issue on the ground. So after I came back from my exchange, I wanted my thesis to really be something with regards to poverty. So that's when I wrote my thesis on the impact of food inflation on poverty in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And that's when I saw, okay, there's so many different sectors really need different policies and issues. It gave me a wider perspective on rural versus urban. So, for example, mm-hmm. when food prices rise, of course, the urban poor actually doesn't benefit from it because they're buying it at a higher price.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the farmers are able to sell their prices now at a higher price. So they're actually benefiting from that. So when I saw all the numbers and the statistics about this, I was like, okay, I want to put my efforts towards rural sectors and finding ways that I could actually help them. When I started volunteering on the side, like I worked with Grameen Foundation. So they're a microfinance organization. So I worked with them on a project where we gave financial literacy to sari-sari store women, making them more financially independent. Oh. I worked with this other NGO called ICM. So we work with the bottom 7% of the Philippines. So imagine those who earn less than 22 pesos a day. So there, that's where I was a research analyst. Mm-hmm. So these NGOs, like, were in Manila. And, like, I really loved what they were doing. Like, they were pretty prestigious NGOs in the development field. And I was lucky to learn so much from the people who I worked with. But then what I always found lacking was I don't know what's happening on the ground. Yeah, we do some groundwork, like, every weekend, like, once a day. But, like, I never interacted directly with the community. And for me, more than anything, I wanted to understand it from their perspective and from the local perspective and being on the ground. So that's when I decided, okay, like, I'll go to Siargao. And then I found this farm that I could volunteer in. And that's what really opened my eyes, like just being with them, seeing what their goals are, and then knowing that like they have so much potential, and eventually like empowering them to even reach that further. And like really our ethos in Lokal is like we work with the community rather than for them.
Yeah.
Because we want like you want it to be sustainable. You want it to be something that they're proud of. And like eventually in the long run, like we want to be insignificant to them because we want them to do everything on their own. And then when we're done with the project, like that's when we move on to a different community that we could also help out.
It's so interesting that you had an internship experience with Grameen. They're a Bangladesh microfinance company, right? I didn't know that they opened in the Philippines, or they have projects in the Philippines.
Yeah, they actually do. Their team is quite small. It's like less than 10. And I actually like came across Grameen Foundation when I was just reading on Muhammad Yunus's book. And I was like, oh, Grameen Foundation, I really like what they're doing. And then I started researching. Then I saw, oh, they do have a branch here in the Philippines. I just sent an email saying, like, I want to volunteer. I want to learn from you guys. And then eventually, then they said, okay, sure, you can volunteer with us. And that's when like, I really started learning so much.
Wow, that's so interesting. And, you know, it's so useful that your background in economics gives you a really comprehensive understanding. Yeah, of how poverty runs in the Philippines. And now that you've had both sides, the research-based side and the on-ground side, what are the things that you would want to see on written-based research now that you've compared it with actual on-ground learning?
I think when you read research papers, the numbers do matter a lot because that shows how you're going to implement a certain project and really the impact at the end of the day. But then I think really first stems out from understanding the community that you're working with, even with the type of surveys that you made. I remember during the pandemic, I was actually a research assistant to this guy in Cornell for his agri-econ master's. So we were working with Bicol farmers and understanding how they were saving and how they were spending. And from the questions that we asked there, it wasn't all number-based and like statistic-based, really showed a lot about the lifestyle of these certain farmers and trying to understand that and translating that into data and sharing that story with others. So it really stems up from why you're writing this research paper in the first place and then what's the goal of it and for actually help the community that you're working with.
So it's more of the narrative of and context of the place or community that you're studying.
Yeah, and I think when you write the paper, you would want it to make an impact on the community that you're working with. People who come across your paper would see the issue of what's happening on the ground, and then that's when they start implementing different projects and things like that. I mentioned this Agri Journal in Singapore. I was supposed to present it last year, but then because of the pandemic, I decided to push it back. But then things like that, connecting with different people in the research field and understanding how I could help and how this would open people's eyes.
Wow, congrats. That's huge.
Thank you.
And now that you've been able to have experience in both the research side, the corporate life, and then being on the ground now with Local, is the longer term goal for Local to expand and kind of use this model in different islands? Because you never know what the issues that other farmers or other local communities might be facing until you go and do the field work there too, right?
What we love about our org, our NGO, is that we love networking with different like-minded individuals. So we realize there are actually others who do a similar thing to what we do in other island communities. Just engaging with them and seeing how they're doing it and then learning from each other. That's super interesting. And also sharing what we're doing in our island and how they could implement it in theirs. So yeah, our goal is to really expand to different island communities, the model in itself, how Local is working. And yeah, that's really our long-term goal.
So what other NGOs that you know of are doing similar things at Local?
So for example, there's this NGO called Kids Who Farm. They're based in Mindanao or Visayas. I'm not so sure where. Okay. But so they help community gardens and they help engage farmers with it. There's this one store in Palawan called the Seed Library, I think. And they're also trying to preserve the seeds of Palawan and then giving access to more people to sustainable and healthy goods.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. Just start digging when you start talking to people about your projects and then you attract people with the same interest. And I think more than anything, I believe that the big part of the solution really lies in the problem-solving environment of the development sector and how it's a really diverse set of people with different approaches and solutions come together. Especially when you stay rooted in the same goal, then each perspective has a value and you're able to come together and see what you can do.
Yeah,
in
the bigger
future.
Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any solutions that you've learned from talking and ideating with these people that you think can be transferred out of the island setting and into more urban cities like Makati and other major cities, not just even in the Philippines, but throughout other first world countries as well?
What I said a while ago is rural and urban sectors really do have different policies that you can implement.
Yeah.
But then I think in the bigger perspective, the end goal of Local is access to sustainable and healthy lifestyles and affordable, right? And I think that could also come up from support your local businesses, even in the city, local sari-sari stores, the local carinderias, and then just really starting with yourself and how you could help these smaller individuals rather than those big corporations and things like that. But yeah, we do want this model of a marketplace where you can help with the farmers training and giving them seeds and things like that. I think that's more important, understanding the producers and consumer side. Recently also, we started experimenting with our weekly talks. We have weekly meetings with the farmers, but then now we're trying to include the consumers into the whole picture and understand it from their perspective. And it's still something that we're trying to play around with, but then from here, we saw why the consumers want to pay this price. And then the farmers are saying, no, like it has to be this price because this is where all the labor comes in, yeah. like the costs and expenses. So it's really just understanding it from both sides. I know I also fall into prey when I buy something. Of course, sometimes you just want to buy something that's cheaper, right?
Yeah.
Then you forget about the whole back and side of how did that product come to be. Mm-hmm. So it's actually quite interesting that we're doing this because it just gives you a different perspective. And both also the farmer's side, they understand what do the consumers want and the demand and supply to meet, right?
Mm-hmm. What are some interesting learnings from these conversations that you've been having? I'm just curious on like a personal level to see or hear about the exchange between both the consumer and the producers.
So for example, some of our produce, they were asking, oh, how come it's set at this price? It's so high. Mm-hmm. And then like they understand, okay, it's not in season, but we're still planting them because mm-hmm. there is a demand for it. It's taking a lot longer to grow or it needs more tender loving care to take care mm-hmm. of it. And the yield is just way less. And from the farmer's perspective, them understanding why the consumers want to buy it at this price and why they don't think it's valued higher. Mm-hmm. So really just understanding that it helps the farmers know what they should plant more of, the consistency of how much they plant. Because during the pandemic, the farmers really started planting less because, of course, like the demand really dropped mm-hmm. down, right? But now a lot of people, or a lot of resorts and restaurants are starting to slowly open up again. And the farmer still hasn't realized, okay, there is a demand again. And from our side, Macau, we're trying to encourage them to say, look, these resorts want to start ordering again. And it's going to take maybe 2-3 months for them to meet the demand. But at least now it's making them know that this can be sustainable. We just have to help each other out. And you also have to be in it. You have to want what we're trying to do and trying to provide for you guys.
For the development sector, I'm just assuming that it operates differently from a social enterprise or more so a business. So for Local specifically, what do you think are the key results areas that you would put into consideration to see whether your projects are indeed growing or if they're improving the lives of the communities that you're partnered with and other aspects of your growth?
I think more than anything, how we determine that is if they can become independent without us. Some of the farmers were not as on hands anymore because we see that they did learn from the training and stuff like that. But then it's also keeping in check with them. Okay, what's happening and how could we solve this issue further? Because some of our projects are social enterprise based, so it helps fund itself. But then other projects also where we try to get grants where we need funding because it's really more of an educational purpose. Actually, recently just got a grant from Metro Bank Foundation.
Oh, wow, for a financial.
Thank you. Yeah, we're actually really happy for that.
Financial
literacy for women farmers. We see that so important, the basic accounting for the farmers, like basic savings, how to allocate funds. And it's really exciting to see there are other organizations there that support what we're doing and that they understand our shared goal.
Yeah.
And I think more than anything, we're trying to slowly do this. Our team's so small, but then we really want impact-driven data, why we're doing what we're doing. And from my previous stint in ICM, I saw how important that data was.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do surveys. And sometimes for some locals, they don't have an incentive to actually answer the surveys, right? Why they didn't answer this, like they don't see the purpose yet.
Yeah,
so I think when we would make them answer surveys in the start, it's really making them understand like this is the purpose, this is why we want it to happen because we do want to make a change. And especially if you do need funding, like you need that data point, right?
Mm-hmm. That being said, but when it comes to funding and operations, from an NGO / social enterprise perspective, do you personally have a harder time finding more hands, like getting more people involved or finding more funding? Whenever I hear or read books or read articles, it's usually a funding issue. But then I think for an initiative like Local, I could definitely foresee it also being a staffing issue to execute.
It goes back to like a funding issue. Because Local, we really network with so many different people who just want to help out. And that's what helps in the start. All the ideation, all the back-end work, how could you make this project come to life? But then, of course, need funding for that thing. So the funding, it takes so long to make a grant proposal, to do all those data stuff, which not a lot of people have time for also. So kind of like the administrative side of NGOs, that's what no one really wants to do, right? It's like that's kind of the boring stuff. But you have to acknowledge, you have to do this because you want to make this project come to life.
Yeah, and let it continue running. Mm-hmm. You really make a great point. So we usually ask our guest speakers this at the end of our podcast. So how do you think we can turn this world around? I know it's like a loaded question.
That's such a loaded question. It's just not a one-time thing. Okay, I volunteered in an NGO. I'm here on the ground. But it's really gaining a nuanced understanding of the situation. Mm-hmm. And then not only coming up with ethical impact and data-driven solutions, but mm-hmm. then also putting faces to the names and statistics. It's a reciprocal process of growth for me, like towards empowering a community to create tangible and sustainable change mm-hmm. in spite of the disparities, to narrow the gaps of inequality, and to really maximize their potential. And I think like where my passion comes from is gaining a multi-level understanding of the communities and their struggles, and then finding value in the different perspectives in a team working together towards one goal, and then translate my position of privilege into action.
Yeah, good.
That's a beautiful resolution. And for all our listeners who don't know where Siargao is, Siargao is known to be the surfing capital of the Philippines. It has beautiful shoreline. It's a teardrop-shaped island in the south of the Philippines. And Kyra's been living there for months, and it's all been good. So, yeah, if you have any shout-outs that you would like to mention, or groups or initiatives that you would like to promote, feel free. This is your platform.
Oh, yes. If anyone wants to volunteer, just check out our website, localsiargao.com, or Instagram handle, Local Lab.
Do you guys have any like remote volunteer opportunities?
Yeah, so we do have remote volunteer opportunities and also like on the ground. So I think I have like 8 people working online now, like as volunteers. Oh. We recently just got one volunteer who's actually based in London, but like from the Dominican Republic. And she just said, like, she just came across her platform and she was super inspired and that she wanted to volunteer with us. And we have like someone who's also working for Local from Spain. And then we have a bunch of college interns and volunteers from Manila who are helping us out.
Wow, wow, that's so great.
And it's spelled L-O-K-A-L, right?
Yes.
Awesome. We'll include that in the post. This was super awesome. Thank you so much for making time out to speak with us again and let everyone know about the amazing work you're doing on the ground. I think it was really beneficial for the three of us to learn more about local initiatives that are going on and are very, very much needed in the Philippines. And on a personal level, hearing stories about how people are doing this full time and living this on their daily life to help other people is super inspiring. So thank you.
Thank you guys for having me. It was really nice talking to y'all.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
We're Earth friends.
And the Earth is our friend. Bye, everyone.